Welcome, everyone, to Four Guys in a Comic Podcast. Today, we're talking about the one and only Infinity Gauntlet event. For those of you that don't know, at this point, Thanos has acquired the gauntlet, consisting of 6 Infinity Gems. These gems give him control over, well, all of reality. So, the series starts up, and we basically see beautiful George Perez art. For those of you that don't know, it's a 6-issue miniseries. And right away, we see a nice big splash page that has made out of stone. It says the word God. And I think that's a fairly accurate description of Thanos at this point with the gauntlet. Right off the bat, I'm going to mention Mephisto is here. And the reason he's here is to get the gauntlet for himself. Obviously, being Mephisto, he's selfish and whatnot. So he's basically Thanos' lapdog.
Yeah, you know, when I first opened the page of this book and I saw that, I actually hadn't read anything pre to this. I hadn't really explored it. I just heard that it was a good series and I picked it up. But when I saw Mephisto on the first page, I was like, why is he here? And I never figured it out until you just explained it just now. It's weird that you would see someone that, I guess, powerful on Earth being this worried about the situation. But, you know, it's a really cool page, and like you said, the art is fantastic with it. It really pulled me in, and I mean, I'm always talking about space art and everything else. I mean, I've mentioned in a few other issues, and the one thing that tops it for me is these Thanos issues, whether it be Jim Starlin or even here, you know, it's George Perez is fantastic.
No, he is. I mean, George Perez's work is just unbelievable. And it really just kind of jumps out at you. I mean, there's a few panels like here and there. It almost looks three-dimensional. His artwork really just kind of reaches out to you.
Yeah, to me, this is really like the standard for it. Like whenever I'm mostly comparing comic art, I'm comparing it to this.
Yeah, I mean, George Perez, the amount of detail is just unbelievable that he puts in.
So before we get any further with this, I was going to ask you, now that you're saying Thanos, I say Thanos. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. What is the correct verbiage for him?
I don't know. In the movie, they said Thanos. I like to say Thanos. I guess it's just say it how you want to say it, I guess. I've never heard anyone really officially say anything besides in the movie.
How do you say it, Nova?
Thanos.
Kadis?
Thanos.
Thanos. So we have 2 Thanoses and 2 Thanoses. Is that what I'm understanding?
Looks like it.
All right. Okay. So for your viewers out there, feel free to add into the comment section down below what you think. Is it Thanos or Thanos? Or maybe it's just a Southern thing.
Right? Oh, man. So you told me, Red, you said you actually haven't read this before until up to recently, right?
Like, believe it or not, embarrassing as that may sound, it is. I just never got around to it. No, I kid you not, I've had it, the 6 issues sitting in a long box in my attic for who knows how many years. I want to say I sold it off like 2 months ago, and here we are reading it. But I just never got around to it.
I can't believe that you sold it off. When did you read it for the first time, David?
A few days ago.
Really?
Well, you know, this was right before I really started getting into comic books, and most of my experience. See, I got into comic books and then I fell out of them for a long time, and then I got back into them. So my experience in the past couple of years has been read everything from the point that I got into comic books forward instead of going further back. So unfortunately, I just missed this series whenever I first started, because I actually started with Age of Apocalypse, and it wasn't too much after this that came about.
Yeah, it was a couple of years, but I mean, you got to think, back then, I guess, no internet. It's not like you can just go and find things real, real easy either. Like, you can't just search it on Amazon or eBay or something if you want to go read back. You got to go actually go out and hunt for it. I know Nova over here has the fancy omnibus of it. Nova, when was the first time that you read Infinity Gauntlet?
It was a couple years ago. I think after, was Infinity 2 years ago? Or was that last year?
Infinity, I think, was like 2012.
Well, I read it right after that because I was interested in Thanos.
Mm.
And yeah, now I got to read the prequel stuff and all the useless tie-ins. So that was good.
For reflect back on this, you know, when it came out, is actually when I joined the military. So that probably would help. When I first joined, my reading really came to a halt. And the 90s, I'm going to not lie, 90s stuff really didn't excite me that much either. I don't know what it was about the 90s comics. At that time, I started going back into the 60s. Let me
hit this until stuff. Age of Apocalypse. Age of Apocalypse was really, really good.
See, that's the thing, though. Like, I mean, I wasn't necessarily... I couldn't comprehend how popular this stuff was back then. I was pretty young at the time. So was there a bunch of hype around Infinity Gauntlet? Do y'all remember?
I don't remember anything, but then again, I was on a ship in the middle of the sea, so...
Well, and that's the thing, is the idea of huge crossover events wasn't really as profound as it is now. I mean, now everything's crossing over with everything. I mean, Secret Wars being a good example of that. But, you know, they didn't really start with a lot of the crossover stuff until... like the mid 80s. So you didn't really have, I mean, they started with actually the first couple of Secret Wars was where there was a lot of this part happens in this book and this part happens in this book. It wasn't necessarily these characters are in this book with these other characters. So it was a piece of the story happened in each title, but they were still kind of compartmentalized. They didn't really start doing huge crossovers until like the Mutant Massacre. That's when you really started getting a lot of mixing characters in different books. So the idea of crossover events still wasn't widely profound, so it wasn't something that they really hyped up a whole lot.
Okay, and y'all would say that Thanos' popularity grew a lot after this, or did y'all really hear about him before this too much? I mean, he was kind of a major player, I guess, in the late 70s and then in the early 80s a little bit and stuff, but he died off for a while. So when he came back, I guess, for this and Infinity Quest, was his popularity still up there, or were y'all like, who's Thanos?
Yeah, I was more like, who is he? And in the 70s, he wasn't that big of a player, in my opinion. You know, there was a few top Marvel 2-in-1s. I think it was what, Marvel Team-Up, Daredevil's Avengers... But, you know, just little bits here and there. It really wasn't until the 90s when, you know, they gave him the power of God that he really started to, you know, become popular. And you know, everybody loves a good villain.
Oh, yeah, and this is what, 1991, I believe, is when this series started?
Yeah, it started the middle of 91, the end of 91.
I think it was December 1991 is the first issue came out.
Yes.
Gotcha. Well, let's dive right in, guys. I mean, we've got the... that we've got Mephisto and Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet on his arm, and they're sitting on that cliff taking a look out at where the rocks form the word God. And then Mephisto is telling Thanos that's what he is. That's his power. He's got the power of God.
And when I saw that, you know, the first thing that I thought of is I go into our current stuff in Marvel, and I think of God Doom. That was the first thing I thought of. And then when Doom makes his entrance and the stuff that we'll talk about later, it's like, yeah, okay. I see where some of that stuff is coming from today.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's crazy. I mean, Doom in Secret Wars is the end-all be-all, but in this, in the 90s, Thanos was the end-all be-all.
Yeah.
But coming off from this page, we see the God... and Mephisto and Thanos standing there on the hillside, the cliff. And we come right into the moment is upon us. And you see Thanos standing there with the Infinity Gauntlet to his chest. And it's the real first time you're like, wow, this is happening. He's ready. Everything's about to go down. And just from the context from Mephisto, you can tell that he's like, oh no, like, the stars must come to realize what is happening. And you can tell that he's falling behind Thanos. Like, he's worried. He sees Thanos pick up this boulder and this rubble and stuff, and he just destroys it. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, this is Thanos really getting a feel for the absolute power that he has while wielding the gauntlet. And then it just shifts straight over to Dr. Stephen Strange.
Yeah.
And he's at, what is Strange's house called again? I don't remember what the term is for it. Isn't it Grey Malkin, I believe?
No, the Sanctum... Sanctum...
Sanctum Sanctorium, yes, that's right.
Yes.
Sanctum Sanctorium.
Told you he was on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, but he's at... we see Doctor Strange at the Sanctum Sanctorium.
And he has a bunch of chairs, but he never uses them. I've noticed that. The chairs are there for Wong.
Yeah, that's basically... he likes to hover.
When he wants to invite the guests into a palm read make a few extra bucks.
There you go. And... Rusty, why don't you tell us about Strange's unexpected visitor?
Oh, yes. You hear the noise, and he goes rushing. Doctor Strange goes upstairs, and who do you think falls in through the roof but none other than Norrin Rad, the Silver Surfer? And what a lot of people don't know before this is that it was in his Silver Surfer series, he actually was a part of the revival of Thanos' Second Coming. He landed upon a planet... and he ran into what he thought was an illusion, but he walks in, and it is actually Mistress Death's palace. And while he's there, he witnesses Thanos re-arise from the summoning of Death. And what he's coming to do is, after this whole storyline where Norrin Rad wants to stop Thanos from his plan, and everything that his idea is from destroying everybody... and so he wants to come and warn Earth.
Now, okay, so I'm obviously missing some other storyline or something, because he comes to Earth, but he says that he got sidetracked, and he's there not in too late of a time. Do we know what storyline where he was sidetracked? What was happening with him?
He had to go pick up drive-through for Galactus.
Yeah. Well, he did visit Galactus. Because he found out, I'll just toss this in, he found out that Galactus had basically taken away his guilt for all the planets that have been destroyed. So he got that back.
So Nova, what story is this that's coming out of?
It's in the Silver Surfer solo series.
Okay. Yeah, it's a really good run. If you haven't read it, you should definitely try it.
And he also runs into a stone version of Thanos. We were talking about Secret Wars and Jonathan Hickman taking from this. It's funny, there was a panel here where Thanos is, there's a stone statue, and it's in that position where Thanos was at the end of Infinity, with his arms sort of stretched in front of him. And it just reminded me of that as well. And so he basically gets attacked by that stone version of Thanos, and that occupies quite a bit of time as well.
You know, it's weird, because actually, for the Second Coming of Thanos, like I said, he had to be... rebirthed, basically. At the end of the King Size Avengers issue, with it, the split story of Thanos versus the Avengers, it was basically the end to it. Thanos is actually frozen into stone in that position by Adam Warlock before he sucked into his own soul gem. And he sacrificed himself, basically, to stop Thanos before he took over everything. And one thing that you do see before the end of the comic, when you see Thanos just frozen there, is that he's standing there with his arms out, and you see what looks like tears running down his face. So you can tell he's still alive in the stone.
So now, like we mentioned, Surfer is telling Doctor Strange what's going on. And we jump back to Thanos and Mephisto. And, you know, Thanos is saying, "What should I do with my power now?" And he says, "Anything I want." And he obliterates a planet. And he says, "I am incapable of error." This is the personification of Thanos that we know and love now, where his ego is immeasurable as well.
Oh, yes. He is willing to do whatever he can with what little he has, and nothing will stop him. But I want to mention that the art on the exploding planet looks fantastic, especially with the reds and pinks. And the yellows really popping out of it.
And like I said before, it really looks three-dimensional in this artwork in there. It really draws you in. But, you know, I want to skip back a little bit when with Thanos talking. I just got to throw this out there. You know, I have two young boys, 6 and 8 years old. Our house is a squatty house. So they're watching Superhero Squad every chance. And every time Thanos is talking to this, I just hear the actor's character's voice from the TV show. So I hear that. I don't know. You guys watch Superhero Squad at all?
No, I don't.
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, nope. Well.
You know what, though? Like, whenever I was reading it and I was imagining what his voice sounded like, I kind of pictured what it sounded like in Guardians of the Galaxy somewhat. I thought they did a pretty good job on that.
I can't get out of this chair. My legs are asleep. So, but one thing I'd like to point out, and it's kind of said as an aside, it's not really an important thing that they try to make it. They just, it feels like they're just trying to slip it by us. But, you know, Thanos was pretty powerful before. But what they mention is when death resurrects him, they said, along with renewed life, death gave him greatly augmented power. And that's not even with the Infinity Gauntlet. So he's already boosted as far as his power levels before he even got the gauntlet.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point there. He's already a badass.
Yeah, and you kind of see that when he's getting the gems. I have a list here. He gets the Soul Gem from the Inbetweener, Power Gem from a character named Champion, Space Gem from the Gardener, Time Gem from the Runner, the Reality Gem from the Collector, and the Mind Gem from Grandmaster. Yeah. So he's already able, I believe the Inbetweener was in a shield that was otherwise impenetrable. So he manages to break that shield. So yes, that is worth mentioning. He is definitely already really powerful.
So Nova, so now that you mentioned where they came from, what about the glove itself?
There's no actual mention of it. It's almost as if he just popped them on his regular glove.
I was kind of curious on how that worked. How does the glove make all of them connect?
Well, if you hold the gem, if you have it on your person, you already control the power of it.
Okay.
So, yeah, if he has just the time gem on its own, he can control time. If he has it on him, it's
in his pocket, or if it's in his fingertips, it doesn't.
Yeah.
If it's on your...
Each one kind of has a pro and con, too, because, like, in the earlier Warlock series, when we first see the Soul Gem on him, he has a certain time period in which he can live. Like, he has, I think they said it's a year, and it's because it's connected to him, it's slowly eating away at his soul, and it takes bit by bit from him. And so they gave him a time frame before the Soul Gem finally consumed him. So it's kind of like each one has its pro and con for the other. Like, I guess if you have the Soul Gem and it's slowly eating away at you, you can use the Time Gem and slow down the process.
So each kind of like a yin and yang.
Yes.
Oh. Gotcha. One thing I'd like to point out, because you mentioned the movies previously, is you do get to see the Infinity Gauntlet itself. It has no gems in it, but you see the gauntlet itself in Odin's trophy room in the original Thor movie, and it's just for a second.
Oh, wow. See, I've never seen the Thor movie. I know, right?
There's your homework assignment for this week.
That's the thing, though. I'm not that into Thor. I'm just going to say it right now.
Saved yourself a lot of time.
Did I? Oh, Nova's not a fan.
In my opinion.
I like the movie.
The first one was okay. The second one was... it looked nice.
Oh, well, I'm just hoping for this Infinity War movie to work out. But with this, we already have the story, so it's cool. I think the Infinity Gauntlet looks really cool on Thanos, whether they want to call it a mitten or not. It's pretty dang cool.
I just like to talk about Thanos' costume. You know, he's kind of gone more purple nowadays, but I do have to say that the gold with the blue really seems to work really, really well for him, because any man who walks out of his house just like that obviously has nothing to fear.
I say gold and blue, and I don't know why I think of Rich Rider Nova. I see that costume in here for some reason, but that's just me.
So, moving on here, we start to see the end of the flashback, where it's starting to explain that he has the soul, the mind, the power, the time, the reality, and the space gem. And he's finally got them all together. And he finally explains that no longer the laws of nature bind him. His will can bend the very fabric of reality, and he is all, and all there is now is his command. So, obviously, this is from Surfer explaining to him, to Strange on the couch, what exactly he has and what exactly he can do to it. But then we go into this scene where we're watching a few people come out of a bar. We see a guy smoking a cigar, and they are complaining that they should have left hours ago, but little did we know who they are.
Bambi Long. How come she didn't get more of a couple more panels?
Oh.
The blonde bimbo.
Yeah, Bambi Long.
So these three miscreants that we're talking about here is Jake Miller, Ralph Bunker, and Bambi Long. And they apparently are just common criminals at this point. They just committed a crime. They knocked off a liquor store, wasted the shopkeeper, and then spent the rest of the day in a bar.
Yeah. Now they want to leave the state and go to Canada.
Better watch out, Nova.
I was just going to say, yeah. But nothing to worry about, because as they're driving, they drove right off a cliff. And they all died.
But it kind of makes you wonder. It's like, okay, we're reading this story about Thanos and Silver Surfer and Stephen Strange. What do these common criminals have anything to do with anything? But so those miscreants just died. They just drove off the cliff. And then it goes right into talking about a little bit more flashback stuff by Silver Surfer. Talking about him and Destroyer essentially getting sucked into the Soul Gem. And that is where they meet Adam Warlock. And Adam Warlock was able to, after some time spent in there, cast a spell that the Destroyer and he were able to return to the reality that they were ripped from and back into their bodies. But by that time, Thanos had disappeared.
Yeah, Thanos was frozen in stone and then nowhere to be found. But we see Adam Warlock come out of this, and he's been gone for a while, the same amount of time that Thanos was. He sacrificed himself to kill Thanos. But right after this page, we see the birth of Nebula, right?
Well, kind of the undeath of Nebula.
Right.
That's yeah. What Thanos's relative of some sort. Hold on, let me find it.
Yeah, it's his proclaimed granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the undying of her, I don't know what to call it. He basically burnt her in one of the prequel issues as well.
Mm-hmm. So to me, basically, like, he made her into a zombie is pretty much the best way to put it.
And but she exists between life and death.
Yes,
it's almost like Deadpool in Age of Apocalypse, David.
Dead Man Wait, yes, sir.
Yep.
Yeah, and basically the reason he's doing all this is to impress death.
Yes, his love of death.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that the three strangers that died in the car crash, Adam Warlock, Gamora, and Pip the Troll, they're basically incarnated in these people, and they're going to transmute into their regular forms over time.
Yeah, you don't really get any clue as to that until Bambi starts turning green.
Yeah.
You know, when I first read this, I was like, what the hell is going on? Basically, I was like, I'm sure you felt that way too, read a little bit.
I was just like, what's going on? They killed off the bimbo and now she's turning green. I was like, what is happening here? That's like, all right, okay, yeah, okay. They're being possessed. But I thought it was going to be by bad guys, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, who knew that?
The way that they're talking about it, yeah.
Yeah, who knew that it would be the people randomly see die earlier on turn into the three more important people in the series?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they had to insert them in here somehow. But let's get into, because this is actually the point where they start talking about, you know, why Thanos is there, what his purpose is. And that is because he is in love with death. And she is, at this point, spurning him because she gave him a task and he hasn't done it. He's like, well, I have the Infinity Gauntlet. What are you going to do now? And she's just like, turns around and walks away. He's like, what the hell? What am I supposed to do? And then he remembers what he has to do.
And what's interesting with death, she never really speaks either. You know, it's all him basically in his mind or talking with who is he talking with again?
Mephisto.
Yeah, thank you. Talking with him, and he's trying to piece it all together. But Death, she doesn't say a word. And what I also found interesting is that she went from a skull face to now a woman's face.
Death does that. She goes in between from living to dead in appearance quite often.
If you've read Thanos Rising, you can see when he first meets her that she is in the human form. And that's the form he actually falls in love with. So whenever she turns into that form, it's actually the woman he loves. But when she is skull-faced, that's when he knows that she is serious. It's actually whenever she shows emotion that she turns back into this human form.
Now, Thanos Rising, you're talking about, that's that four-issue series? That's a flashback from his childhood and everything like that?
Yeah, you see him growing up on Titan.
I read that. That was actually really good, too. That really, you know, helps put some perspective when I was reading this as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's so weird that an origin story like that came out so late in his lifespan and that they actually ran with it. But it was good.
Yeah, it was really written well. And it helped me actually a lot when I was reading this for the first time.
But moving on, like I said, she turns into that when she's showing some kind of emotion. And she always, as weird as it says, gives him the cold shoulder like that. You see it many times before this and you see it many times later. But I want to go on to this page of his throne. The art looks amazing in it, and he just pops it up out of nowhere. And you can tell he shows his love for Death by even making her in the pillars.
Yeah.
He has his thrones. It's cool. I mean, you don't see the floating chair anymore, but you see a whole floating basic planet asteroid now.
Palace. Basically, a palace in her honor.
Yeah, and he is boasting about his gauntlets and what he can do with it and how everyone should be threatened by it. And all he wants to do is prove to Death that he can make her happy in some way and that he deserves her love. And you see what he does to Nebula, and he's basically torturing her. And he's like, please, just love me, before he just gets frustrated, and then boom.
You can see that he gets more frustrated from the unrequired love that he's been getting from Death. And the more she doesn't do anything, the more frustrated he gets, so the more he wants to impress her. So he's, you know, he's on a cycle that's just not working for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like I said, you know, she keeps giving him the cold shoulder until he realizes what he has to do. And what is it that he has to do, Rusty? What is Thanos' big mission to get Death's attention?
With a snap of the finger, he gets rid of half of the universe.
Half the population, yeah.
Yep.
And that was
not just
only the population, the human population, but that was also the animal population as well.
Yep, anything living.
It's half of all life on the planet, or in the universe, is completely and totally just gone, vanished.
And you can see this in some of his Silver Surfer stuff, too. Like in the original, what is it, Silver Surfer 34 Nova? Or is it 34 or 35? But either way, he does kind of a tease to Surfer where he takes him to a planet and shows him this population of animal life. And he's like, oh, you know, it's never been touched before. It's never been here. And then Surfer's like, what's the point of this? And he's like, well, because we were there, we shared bacteria with them, and now they're all dead, basically. And it's like, whoa, that's what he's doing? And then he continues on from there to gather the gems, and now this, with a snap of the finger, half the population gone.
Right, and in the next few pages, we see Spider-Man seeing half the population disappear. People are freaking out. Someone's baby is gone. Friends are disappearing. You know, we see Captain America walking in the Avengers building, and Hawkeye and Circe disappear right in front of him. And it's really interesting to see how shocked everyone is and the desperation when they can't do anything about it.
And after that, we even see Red Skull's favorite person floating in space.
Did I miss a panel?
He has an eye patch.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Nick Fury. I was so excited when we saw Colonel Fury in this, you know, with the eye patch, cigar. I was like, all right, now this is going to go somewhere.
I think you said Colonel Furry.
Furry?
It sounded like you said Colonel did say, Furry. You said, you
I'm did sorry, say I got Furry. Excited there. Okay, Colonel Nick Fury, when he gets me all hot and bothered. What can I say?
You got to keep all of that. Alex, you got to keep all of that.
It's all going to be in there. It's okay.
Okay, so now that I made myself look like an ass, Nick Fury, I was excited. Okay, yes. Between that and them talking about the cube, the cosmic cube.
What do you think about Hulk just sitting in the diner like that, Nova?
I liked it. I know that at this time Hulk was pretty smart. So I just, where did they come up with this costume? He's wearing, he looks so weird. Just his shirt is opened completely, but I don't know. It's funny.
It looks like 1970s. Him. He's just missing a gold chain across.
Yeah.
He wears a belt with his shirt unbuttoned, tucked into his pants.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Hulk does as, I mean, he's just basically a walking Christmas. Because, you know, red shirt, red pants, green skin, yeah. And then, you know, he's been sitting there drinking, like, I mean, that's the thing, really.
It's, drinking it's pitchers.
Drinking pitchers, but, I mean, let's be honest. It's Hulk. You think that's going to affect him? So, I don't understand the reason why he's there in the bar.
I never knew that Hulk drank.
It's just, he's so Hulk, he just tosses, like, the pitcher into the TV. Oh, I've heard enough. This is a great page, actually, now that we're talking about it.
But bottom line is, Hulk does what Hulk wants. Who's really going to say anything?
All right, and then we move on to the Skrull here. And why don't you tell us what's going on with the Skrull, David?
Well, the Skrulls, essentially, this just goes on to continue with half the population everywhere is gone. So they're talking about the Skrulls. They're like, well, I don't know what's going on, but we got it. We know exactly who's up. Who is up to this stuff, and it's got to be the Kree. So it's like, oh, we're going to go to war because the Kree had to be the people responsible for doing this.
And see, this was a little panel, but I wanted to bring it up because later on, crazy stuff happens.
Well, we see basically more people disappearing, and what the rest of this issue basically did was involve, you know, the entire universe is feeling this, and we see multiple characters that we may or may not have been introduced to yet in the story start to get involved with it.
If you're in that room where you see Fire Lord and Drax and everyone in there, if you look at the TV screen, you can actually see Alf on it.
I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, you know, I never noticed that before now. Even just flipping through it right now, I'm just like, whoa, Alf. But anyways, let's move on.
So then we go to the hotel or the motel room where the three miscreants that have just been risen from the dead after being possessed by cosmic entities. We know who they are at this point as far as, you know, us, the readers. Well, us, the four guys know who they are, but we aren't introduced to who they are in the story yet. But we see, to continue the trend of people just randomly disappearing, Bambi just fades into nothingness. It's kind of strange because, you know, if they're already dead, how are they getting taken away again?
She just got really unlucky and found the 5-hour gap where she was brought back to life and then died again, basically. And it's like, oh, poor Gamora. But after that, you see Pip freak out and he runs into the room and you see Adam Warlock in a cocoon. He hasn't disappeared yet. And this leads us into issue number 2. Hold on.
I'm going to say with that cocoon thing, I had no idea what that was at first, to be honest. I thought it was a sleeping bag or I had no clue what I was looking at.
If you look at the original Warlock series, he actually, like, hibernates in this cocoon sometimes to where he needs to get back into a certain part. And it's like he goes there to meditate. He goes there to reform himself sometimes even. But I think it only happened one other time or two other times previous to this. And that was in between the original series with Roy Thomas until Jim Starlin reimagined him back in the 70s. It was basically like a hibernation, let's put it that way.
Gotcha.
So we go into issue number 2. And this is a pretty cool issue because it's one of the ones I own. I mean, I don't own the whole series, but this is one of the ones I can pull out and look at, so it's pretty cool.
That's a first for Rusty.
I got a bunch of old stuff, but we've been reviewing some newer stuff mostly lately. So this is nice for me to go into my collection and pull out some of the older stuff I got.
That's cool. No, it is fun.
So the issue starts off, again, showing us the gravity of the situation. A pilot has disappeared from the plane, and the plane had crash landed. well, safely landed thanks to the Avengers' help. And obviously helping people. People are freaking out. And we're introduced to more heroes getting involved with the story, particularly the Cosmic Guardian Quasar. Is that how you pronounce the name?
Quasar. Yeah, it's like it's an event that happens in space. I don't know exactly what it is, but I've heard about it in my astronomy class, so let's just roll with that.
And yeah, Quasar is actually the guy down in the Savage Land.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and as we mentioned before, we now see the Kree Empire, and the Kree is blaming the Skrulls. So I'm guessing this is what Rusty was foreshadowing. There must clearly be a war between, well, the Kree-Skrull war, obviously, that starts.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that they reflect back to the Kree-Skrull war. It's one of my favorite Avengers stories, and, I mean, it came out in the early 70s, so, I mean, you might have read it, Red Skull, maybe. I mean, you were alive around then, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's cool to see that Quasar's coming around, and that we have this battle re-emerging between the two races.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's be honest, though. The Krees and the Skrulls are always just one step away from war.
Yeah. They always...
My pizza's late! We must go to war!
Exactly.
I gotta ask this, though, and I'm hoping one of y'all knows this. Why does Thor have the weird, funky mask on his face? I've never known this.
It's not really a mask. It's supposed to be his helmet. You'll notice that later versions of Thor, specifically Lady Thor currently, they've got the full face mask. But one thing that really, that's less of a issue for me than the mask, than the face helmet, is the big bushy beard. It's not something that you see very often when Thor has a big beard.
No, it's not.
It makes me take him more seriously.
But as we learn, it's not really Thor.
No.
Or we get that hint. He gives us that hint in there, whereas it says, even in the midst of the chaos, I've got to cover that I'm not the original Thor in a thought bubble.
Yeah, so like, no, I was. That's why I asked. I was like, who is this guy? But moving on from that, we go back to Strange's apartment. And I just want to say, if you're looking at the full page of page 9 of issue 2, it looks crazy, and I cannot imagine how hard it was to design this page.
Oh, I know. To me, what it looks like it's, you know, he probably drew the main stuff, then handed it off to some young kid. Okay, get all this background stuff done for me. That's a lot of stuff on there.
Took up like 3/4 the page there.
Yeah, it's Adam Warlock talking to Doctor Strange. But obviously Strange does not know who that is at the time. And what they decide to do is share minds.
More specifically, opens his soul to him, which is not something that Doctor Strange does lightly.
Yeah, but with Adam Warlock, he's had the soul gem before so long. He's used to having multiple personas. And so this is something that he's able to do, even across the vast gaps of space and time. I'm also looking at this, and I'm seeing the cool t-shirts in this ad right now, and I'm like, yeah, if you have the actual issue, that's cool.
T-shirts aside, the energy given off by Strange's encounter with Adam Warlock is sensed by everybody's favorite metal-masked villain, Dr. Victor Von Doom.
You mean God, right?
Speaking of
pre-God.
If you look on that page, you know, it's a black screen, then the eyes slowly fade in. Doesn't it remind of Secret Wars number 1?
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean,
you
can see that's where they got some of that from.
But then after that, I mean, the art looks on it. Obviously, it looks great. Everything looks great in this. But we go past that page, and we skip a little further, and we see Eros and Fire Lord and Drax looking at a screen. And they're explained what exactly has happened. Half the population is missing, and they're freaking out, trying to figure it out, but I think they have an idea of who it is. But the coolest thing is the very next page. They're very obviously, blatantly shown who did this.
Because who shows up but our favorite purple-faced Titan, Thanos?
Eros better watch out. You know what's funny is the last issue of Eros before this, it was a issue of him flying in on a Warlock issue of all things, and they have these things called pleasure carts. Ooh. Okay, this might be a little risque, but in the issue, Pip is tricked into going to this pleasure cart with this vixen, and he's told by her that he will get endless pleasures if he helps her escape this cart. And so he finds some clippers from someone in a bar, and he sneaks them away from him, and he clips her chains and sets her free. And what happens afterwards is he has to confront the owner of the cart that enslaved her, and none other than Eros flies in after he defeats the guy and is like, "Thank you for helping me and freeing my lady." And then she's like, "Yes, the pleasure has been all mine, and your reward." And he's like, "Yes, my reward, the pleasure." And he's like, "You get to have my pleasure cart." And then she flies away with Eros in a romantic getaway kind of thing. And Pip's kind of screwed out of it by Eros.
A little bow, chicka, bow, bow.
Yeah, so it's funny that you see him here now and that he's reemerging in the Thanos story for this. But moving on, I mean, we see Eros bound to the chair by Thanos, and Mephisto just stands behind him while watching him while Thanos grins at him. And this is when it takes us back to his palace. And throughout all this, he just gets tired of Eros's commentary, and he makes his mouth disappear. It's kind of weird. It kind of reminds me of The Matrix.
I was thinking of a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, yeah? A little more old school than me.
Go figure.
So then after the disappearance of Eros's mouth, it goes to Captain America with a roster of disappeared superheroes. And some of the more notable superheroes on here are, you know, Archangel, Beast, Black Cat, Black Panther, Hawkeye, Firestar. You know, we've got Marvel Girl is gone, Mr. Fantastic.
It's basically the entire Fantastic Four just went missing.
Invisible Woman's there too.
I see Human Torch, Invisible Woman, Thing, and Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of Alpha Flight makes an appearance on the disappearance list. You know, you've got Dagger from Cloak and Dagger, Daredevil. I mean, you've got a lot of the big name people. Like, Hercules really could help out with this whole situation, but he's disappeared. So it's like, let's see how we can take our roster of people who could make this kind of an easier transition, an easier trial, you know, fighting Thanos, and take them out of the picture. And they do that in this roster type format, which is actually kind of cool, if you ask me.
Real quick, if you could put any of these people in the story, who would it be? Just say it real fast. I think that I would put probably Beast in the story.
Does it have to be Marvel?
You will any of the people on the list. Any of the people that disappeared.
Okay. Anyone that disappeared, Thing?
Thing?
Yeah, why not?
See, I'd have to go with Archangel, because he's one of my favorites off of this list.
See, now I'm gonna kind of jump ahead, because, you know, when you start getting all this battle stuff down, you're talking about rosters. The one thing that came to my mind is, what would Batman do?
Oh. What would Batman do, Nova?
And he has prep time. He has prep time.
He would have had the gauntlet already.
But he prepared.
So he would have had the gauntlet already.
He would have had the gauntlet already.
How would he get the gauntlet? That's what I want to know. What would Batman do?
Of course.
Batman aside. He made it. Batman aside. Let's go now straight to, because I mean we were in the Avengers ready room, but let's go straight to Asgard, another group of people that they decided to pull in for this event. Let's talk about what's going on in Asgard.
They're all freaking out is what's going on.
But what I'd like to point out is it looks like a council of the gods, because you've got Odin officiating, but you know, making an appearance also are, you know, Celtic gods, Egyptian gods, Zeus is there. It's basically, they're what Odin calls the Sky Fathers, the heads of the pantheons, and they're all in Asgard for this war room session.
You know, I didn't know who a lot of these people were before I saw this, and I'd never seen an Asgardian council before because, like I said before, I don't really enjoy Thor too much. So,
well, see, like I said, it's not an Asgardian council; it is a council of the Sky Fathers.
Is this like the first time that we see this, though? Do you know?
This is the first time that I recall of seeing this, to where we have the leaders of each pantheon there being represented in this setting.
Okay, cool. So after this page, what do we see, Nova? What is flying in space?
Quasar is flying in space with his, I guess, mental link Epoch, I think his name is.
Something like
that. But anyway, we jump back to the motel. Alf is on again, of course. And we see Pip the Troll sitting with a bag of chips covering a convenient spot. And he's by himself, like we mentioned before. Warlock is meditating, and Gamora has disappeared. So there's a big explosion, and of course, Warlock has left his cocoon, and he is revitalized.
Yep, and in big words, he says, after Thanos. So now we're back to Mr. Victor Von Doom, and what is he doing there, Red?
He's just basically...
He's kicking ass.
Yeah, you know, and that there's those eye panels I was talking about earlier, you know, that you'd see from Secret Wars, but you know, he's just confronting everybody, and this is where you can see, you know, he wants to be in charge, but it's just not going to happen.
Oh no, and that's just the reoccurring theme in this too. He keeps trying to take charge, and if things aren't going to happen, you can kind of think, and it's like, man, you got like a security complex over here or something. But the very next page, we see a very, very beautiful full page art of Warlock and Pip, and it's really cool to see them together again after so many years.
And the whole thing with Warlock and Pip is, you know, that's who thwarted Doom whenever he essentially took down the Surfer with power, and then took down, or was about to take down, Stephen Strange with magic. You know, next thing you know, but they show up and they thwart Doom from, you know, taking over.
You know, it's funny, on the very next page, if you have the comic, is an advertisement for Terminator 2 Judgment Day collector cards.
Ooh,
buddy. But after that, after some
Hold
Arnold
on.
Schwarzenegger,
gotta go get some. I'll be back.
After that, we see Thanos floating in his palace again, and what looks to be like some very, very creepy worm things coming out of Eros. And he's basically just sitting there torturing him. He's torturing him and Nebula, and he's trying to do it for Death's amusement, but she still sits there giving him the cold shoulder. And that's when we go back to Doctor Strange's lair, the Sanctum Sanctorium. That's like a tongue twister. And then we see them back there, and we see Doom sitting there. We see all of the major players in the game, I guess at this point in time, discussing things.
And I would like to note that once again, Stephen Strange is floating.
Makes you wonder, does he float above the toilet?
No.
I don't know about that one, but, you know, like I said, he does own a lot of chairs for floating, you know, all the time. But, you know, it is everybody that was at the Sanctum Sanctorum there, and they're discussing, you know, what are they going to do? We're some of the most powerful people involved in this. Let's do what we have to do. And then it immediately goes right back to Thanos again trying to impress Death. And it's funny that you keep mentioning Death giving him the cold shoulder. Does Death actually have a warm shoulder?
Right.
Well, she's always talking to Deadpool and flirting with him, so to speak. So I always found that funny. We said she doesn't talk to Thanos, but in the Deadpool stuff I've read with her in it, she's always talking to Deadpool.
You know, so, there's only like maybe 3 or 4 times out of all the Thanos things I've read almost all of it, that I can recall her actually talking to him. And the most she's ever talked to him is when they first met in Rising that I can see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I always had the impression that basically she's death. She has no heart. Since she has no heart, how can she love?
See, that's the thing. She can, I guess, in certain ways, because obviously she shows emotion, but at the same time, it's kind of like a metaphor for, I guess, what it takes to make a woman happy.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, I know, that's rough.
That's a whole nother podcast series.
Yeah, let's not open that can of worms.
We're not going to open that can of worms, but I think we all know what that means. So
what happens next actually kind of goes along with what we're talking about now, because Thanos is like, I would do anything to just hear you say my name. And then with a clench of the gauntleted fist, anything! And then everything goes white. And what happens, Nova?
Yeah, he sends a psychic wave of power. And that wave basically flows through, I would have to assume, the entire universe as he's destroying planets. He tussles Galactus's little flying orb. And we see a page of Galactus basically getting a little annoyed. And he had a run-in with Thanos in the Silver Surfer series as well. So he's already not on the best of terms with him. And we see Galactus quickly fly away, basically going to Earth. And then we see Cloak, who, as we mentioned before, has lost Dagger. Mm-hmm. And what is Cloak witness to?
Basically the destruction of the city. Just, everything's fallen into rubble around him.
You know what's weird, though? I think it was in Maximum Carnage he lost Dagger in that storyline, too. So I guess this is the first time he lost her, and later on he lost her again. Sorry for the spoiler. But who else is there with Cloak? David?
He's kind of in disguise, but you cannot disguise that dubious hairstyle.
No, you can't. Yeah,
so it is none other... It is none other than the Wolverine.
Logan.
And that's when you know things are getting serious. The X-Men are getting brought in for this semi-Avengers
story. The ones that are around. Because remember, Iceman and Jean Grey, or Marvel Girl, are among the disappeared. Same with Beast. Beast was on the Avengers at this point. He was kind of bouncing back and forth whenever he was needed. But, some of the original X-Men, some of the most important players in the team... they're among the missing.
Oh yeah, you see that. I mean, it shows that Quicksilver was missing too, but Scarlet Witch is still running around. So
yeah, so essentially it's like they went through each major Marvel title and took half. You know, they had to disappear half, except for, of course, you know, Fantastic Four. They're like, "Oh, we don't want to tell their story. They're gone."
Yeah.
Kind of like in
today's... That's because Fox had the rights.
Yeah.
That's because Fox had the rights.
Fox had the rights. But you know what? I see this a similar thing here. I know I mentioned this in our Secret Wars podcast. I'll say it again. Why are only the heroes really the ones fighting? We got Doom this time, but where are all the villains? Why aren't they out there trying to help save their own planet?
So now we see here is... What is the Avengers... airplane called the Quinjet or
Quinjet, yeah. Yeah.
Quinjet. And we see Namor or no Wonder Man and Scarlet Witch flying it, and everyone is freaking out. You see the destruction under the city, and then we go back to Asgard where the destruction, I guess, is starting to happen there.
Wait one second. Right before that happened, you missed the few panels with Iron Man. He's out in space. He's got some kind of equipment that is measuring energy signals, and then all of a sudden that psychic wave that Thanos popped out essentially just destroyed his equipment and short-circuited everything in his suit.
It's falling down. He witnesses basically the western seaboard, California and everything along it, just fall into the ocean.
Yep. At this point in time, you were in California, right?
I was probably out in the coast.
Ah.
But, yeah.
You know, I just found a continuity error. The entire Fantastic Four was listed among the disappeared, and yet who is flying right next to the Quinjet?
The Human Torch. You're right. You're not supposed to notice those things.
Well, I did.
You get a no prize.
Oh, that's a good point. I've never
pointed I get a that. No prize.
Dang, I can't believe that that happened then. Oh, man. But anyways. Boo on dang. Yeah, boo on dang. I'm boom hour today. But anyways, we go back to the Asgardians, and we see that their rainbow bridge shattered. And we see Namor, and the volcanoes are raising out of the ocean, and he's freaking out. We say, I've never even heard of her before this, but Namorita? Can anyone tell me about Namorita? Yeah,
she was a new warrior.
Yeah, she's a new warrior.
And she was, I think she was, is his name Justice? I think she was his love interest. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Justice. Yeah, she was a new warrior. She's actually, Namorita was involved later in the Samford incident.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, to start off the Civil War, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and Namor and all of the Atlanteans of that strain, essentially, they can fly. They do have the power of flight, and they get especially powered up whenever they're around salt water.
Okay. She has the ankle wings.
Yeah
that is.
So,
kind of like what's his name from Captain America comics number one.
What's his name? It's Thor's son.
Yes.
Hurricane.
Yeah.
Just like
I wonder
Hurricane.
If she can take him off.
Who knows? Can she throw him at people?
Put on a taxi cab.
But here she is flying over Atlantic City. You know, and a big tidal wave is coming to destroy the seaboard.
And she's able to, building.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying that. It's like, there's a Donald Trump building right there.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But she ends up saving only two.
First people. Appearance?
Yeah, that's first it. Appearance. But then it goes in the second panel, you can see the Trump building sinking in the water.
Yep, and then we go back to seeing Thor flying over the ocean and with his weird beard and mask, and we go back to your favorite person, Nick Fury, on the TV.
I would like to point out something. The panel right after the tidal wave, the first time we see Thor flying, he has no beard. And then two panels later, he's got the beard.
I see. Jeez.
That's two no prizes.
That's two right there.
You got two no prizes.
Oh, are you going for the hat trick with this
we're
one?
We're going for the Easter eggs of Infinity Gauntlet.
There we go. Ugh. But yes, now we're back to with Nick Fury.
Why is Vision white?
He just is in this era. He hasn't gotten the green and yellow yet.
Wait, but wasn't he like a red and something in the 70s? Like the early, like a Skrull?
Yeah. Red face, green and yellow. I don't know why he's white. I mean,
I don't know why he's white either.
Maybe
let me consult my friend Professor Google real quick.
Professor Google. Well, maybe who is the inker for this? Joseph Rubinstein. Maybe he just forgot to color him.
He's like, eh, good enough.
I got to meet a deadline.
He's like, George, you're doing a fantastic job. Just we'll roll with it.
So anyways, they're on the Quinjet. They're assessing the damage throughout the world and how ugly things are getting with everything that's going on. And here you just see the destruction of basically New York. It's in rubble. And what's left standing? Doctor Strange's house.
Yep, it's still there. Like I said, it's like another dimension.
Yep.
The Sanctum Sanctorum. Yeah. And Vision was white when he was with the West Coast Avengers.
Okay.
But so the house, so the house is standing, but everything inside got trashed.
Well, everything inside was kind of already trashed. Well, and if you'll notice, the house has a big giant hole.
Yeah.
a big giant hole in the roof.
The window was from Silver Surfer falling through it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then maybe...
From space.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah, and the floor was fine when he landed.
Yeah, it's protected by magic.
Magic carpeting.
You know what's crazy?
On vacuum.
is, I mean, after that we see the end with all of them in there, and it's like, what's happening next? And it's like preparations for war, and they're preparing for what's going to happen. But if you look at the very last page of this, after that, and before we go into the next issue, I have summer specials with special prices on 12 issues. If you subscribe now, subtract $5 from the listed price. And we got everything here for like $15 for 12 issues and $18 for 12 issues. We even have, right now it says, The Toxic Avenger, $18 for 12 issues.
I'm on that one.
Right? Now, I know you want that $27 Conan Saga.
One thing I'd like to point out on the last page with the preparations for war is Thanos's throne thing, his little fortress, has changed quite a bit. Also, right above that, you see a whole bunch of planets that actually spell out the name Thanos.
Yeah. Okay, so that takes us straight into The Infinity Gauntlet, Call to Arms, issue number 3. This issue, wow, it really started jumping. Lots of things were happening, and this is where it really got excited. What do you guys think?
So you want to talk about jumping right into the action, man.
Oh my gosh, I mean, I can't wait to dive into this. And you listeners, well, you're just going to have to wait. This is going to be continued next week. In the meantime, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and don't forget to check out our website. Until then...
Excelsior!
Excelsior!